Yeah, great. Thank you. Yes, I'm going to talk about some ideas of geometry and how they show up in amplitudes. Just to start, like, I'm happy to make this as interactive and possible. So just stop me for questions or comments or anything. So this is some work I've been doing with Cliff Chung and Julio Parra-Martinez at Caltech, and also more recently with Elizabeth Jenkins and Anish Manohar in San Diego. Okay, good. So let's just start with something very simple, namely a theory with scalars. And we'll just write down the Lagrangian. And they have some kinetic term. I'm going to group all the scalars in like a multiplet. So this I index runs over all the scalars in your theory. This is just some, if you wish, like a flavor index. And it has some two derivative kinetic term like this. But we'll allow for like interactions as well. And we'll group all the interaction in some function that depends on the scalar. This is, of course, nothing but the nonlinear sigma model. We'll expand upon it as we go along, but just as like a starting point, this is where we'll start the discussion.
So do we have symmetry here?
I'm assuming no symmetry. I'm just saying there's a scalar. It has some interactions like this, and that's it, nothing else. And even with this like very bare-boned Lagrangian, there's still some structure to it. And there's no symmetry as of yet, but there is something we can do to it. Namely, we can redefine the fields. So if you do a field definition in an effective field theory, things change. You end up in a different field basis. Your Lagrangian changes form. But physical observables remain unchanged. So anything you can measure, anything you can calculate that's invariant should possess this like redefinition should be intact, like this should not change on this field definition. So if we do a field definition, namely, let's just change the scalar to something else, which is a function of the scalar. So like in your mind, you can think like it looks like 5 plus pi squared and so on. So for now, we're just doing like scalars to scalars, no derivatives, no nothing else. And this change is like a coordinate change, like a coordinate transformation in GR. So in GR, you can change your space-time positions, like x, the function of x. You can change coordinates. Here, the coordinates will be taken by the role of the scalar. In the Lagrangian, we also have like d mu phi, its derivative. And this changes to this form. So we get some prefactor. And then the derivative on phi again. And this is how a vector transforms under a coordinate transformation. So the phi will be the coordinate. Well, d mu phi transforms as a vector. And with those two things, we can then ask, what about this prefactor, this coupling here? So gij, it follows from this that gij transforms as a or as a tensor, a two-index tensor, and we will identify this as the metric in field space. So it's a symmetric two-index object, and it transforms in the right way. And then we'll the next like step in the logic is that we'll take that as our definition of a manifold, like a field space manifold. From this metric.
To enter.
So, sorry. I'm not doing any derivatives in GIJ. That was the question. I'm just saying this, it's only a function of phi, and nothing else for the moment. And also restricting to this class of field definitions. We'll get back to it at the end, and we'll do something else then. But for now, it's just this. And OK, and given that, we can now open up our favorite DR textbooks and say, OK, with a metric, what can we calculate? Well, we can calculate objects that, which are derived from the metric. So we have our metric GIJ. We can calculate a Christoffel symbol or connection, which is like derivatives of GIJ. And from that, we can have a covariant derivative, as well as say, the Riemann curvature. That all follows from the declaration that this is a metric. So that was like that. This is like the geometry we were discussing. But how does that show up in amplitudes? And the best way to check is just to calculate some amplitudes. So first of all, like if you have an amplitude with three of these scalars, it vanishes. If you take this and expand out, you get like a leading term, which is the propagator, and the cubic interaction, coordinate interactions, and so on. But the three-point amplitude vanishes. So it's not so interesting. But if you go to one more particle and then four particles.
Wait, it vanishes because of what? Because of conditions?
Or? It matters, yes. So at 3 points, so it has two derivatives. All the amplitude will depend on these derivatives. And for three particles, there are no invariant non-vanishing products of these derivatives. So like pi to pj all become proportional to the mass, which is in this case zero. It's all zero by kinematics. But if we have the four particles, we get something non-zero. And we get something which depends on on these Mandelstams, which is just like the which is its product of these momenta. And because it has two derivatives in interaction, it will end up with two derivatives in amplitude here. And because of kinematic conditions, there are only two independent of this Sijs, and we pick them to be S34 and S24, with some coefficient. And this coefficient, this prefactors, turns out to be the curve, like the Riemann curvatures in field space, like this. Now we're seeing some geometry appearing in the interaction of particles.
What I see uncontracted indices. So what do we what is that? Or this
part of
the particles that you are scattering?
Yeah, there are three indices, open indices here, and they correspond to which flavor enter in the interaction. So if they're all the same flavor, it vanishes because the Riemann is anti-symmetric in two. So if it's all the same, it's zero. So you need something non-zero. So this is actually the interactions of pions in QCD. They behave this way. But also, it's valid for any scalar theory of this form, which is pretty much this.
If I make a field definition transformation such that the kinetic term will be done A, then this RIKJL should pop out as
good. Yeah. So, okay. So you can do field definitions to simplify your life. First thing you can do is you can normalize it with delta ij plus corrections. Second thing you can do is you can actually remove.
I'm thinking that I could somehow diagonalize and there would be positive terms, and I would say that you know, whatever stands on the positive is a square. I mean, I take a square root and I make a transformation such that a new field. But then I should pay the price at the extra terms.
Yes. So you're right in saying that you can always diagonalize and normalize this kinetic term, which is to say that you can find a field basis where Gij equals delta ij plus corrections. You can also find a field basis where the term that's linear in phi is gone, and only the next thing that shows up is two of these phis. This is called like Riemann normal coordinates in the GR context. And from this, that's a special field basis. From this, it's like immediate that the amplitude depends on the Riemann curvature because that's just the quartic coupling. The statement here is that you can do it in any field basis you want. You don't have to do this. You just keep it generic and you calculate, you get, in general, you get like a contact term plus these like channels. And all those things add up combinatorically to be the same object, the same Riemann curvature. And in some sense, it had to be that way because scattering amplitudes are things which are closely related to physical observables. So they shouldn't depend on your field basis. It shouldn't depend on your coordinate choices. And the curvature is like a nice covariant object which transforms nicely under field definitions. So if you ended up with some other thing which has some, like, say, some lone Christoffel symbols, if you thought like this was the answer, then that could not be the answer because the Christoffel symbol changes, it shifts in different field bases. So it should not be like an independent thing in the amplitude. Good. Let's just keep on going. I'll look at one more, namely with five particles. Now, in this case, we have five particles, so we'll have five of these open indices. And you might be surprised or not, the thing that ends up on the F side is like this. There are a couple more terms than before, but not too many. And the last one is like this. Okay, so now we have not two terms, but five terms. Still, it's linear in these like Sij's, again, coming from these two derivatives in interactions. But the coefficients in all these terms are the covariant derivatives in field space, which is also a geometric covariant object, making manifest that the amplitudes are doesn't depend on the field basis.
That's a main question. So if I understand it correctly, you cannot do
5-cube
theory in this context.
We'll do 5-cube maybe afterwards. Oh, there's no potential here. So the 5-cube would be just add a potential. But just like as a setup, we're doing this one first. And then we can add on top other things afterwards. Good. So that's the first statement, that the geometry in field space enters in scattering amplitudes directly as like the the thing that the scattering depends on are all geometric objects. So like the thing you would measure at the Large Hadron Collider would be the curvature in field space of the Higgs boson, for example. But there's even more we can learn from phrasing it this way, namely that there are also relations between amplitudes, not just within each amplitude that there's geometry, but there's also like relations that link these amplitudes together through the geometry.
There is Bianchi identity.
Yeah, okay, good. Maybe I can say that first. So let's just take 4 points. So the Riemann curvature, as derived from the textbook definition, has a Bianchi identity. And that's actually important in order to show that this one is both symmetric, that you can change like IJKL around, and like the answer is symmetric. And you have to use the Bianchi identity in order to shuffle these curvatures around. So all these relations, I've used Bianchi identity to make this as simple as possible. So that this one has like, first, this also has a second Bianchi, where you shuffle the index on the covariant derivative around as well. So that's all like, yeah, utilized. So that's, let's just state the claim, and then we'll investigate. The claim is that you can relate different amplitudes through the soft limit. So if you take one momentum soft of one of these particles, you get a universal relation. And that's familiar from, say, when you have photons, you have like Weinberg soft theorem for photons. If you have a pions, it's called like Adler zero for pions. So there are like some classic result which rely on some soft theorems. This soft theorem depends on the geometry. So the statement is that if you take one particle, it's meant to go to zero. If you have n plus one particles, it is related to the amplitude with one fewer particle through the covariant derivative in field space. That's the claim. And let's just build some intuition to see.
I'm puzzled by this because I saw that you are evaluating all these curvatures at some point, right?
Yes.
So you have some value, you evaluate.
Yes.
So you cannot really measure them at different points in field space.
No, that's right. But you can measure this curvature at that point. You can also measure its covariant derivative at the same point.
How would I measure that?
Well, it's this coupling.
Yes, I measure it from n plus one point function. I mean that then.
Yeah, yeah.
But I cannot do that with what you have on the right hand side.
Good. Yeah, yeah. So that's a very very good point. So just to reiterate, yeah, if you have some manifold, this metric describes. The way to calculate the amplitude is you have to pick a point, you pick your vacuum. Say you pick a point there, that's your vacuum expansion value for your scalars. And that's where all the like these amplitudes are evaluated at this point. So it's like the curvature at this point. Now if you have a function here and you try to somehow like move away from that point, the way to move is through the covariant derivative. Like measures like the change, like slightly away from that point. That's somehow what's going on here. So maybe we'll just do some example, then we'll get back to it.
This is a generalization of what star model you need an amplitude for the Higgs and differentiate over the web.
Yeah, like in practical terms, what you do is that you calculate this with the VEV dependence intact. Mm-hmm. You don't set it to a number. You just say this is a function of the VEV. And then you differentiate with that exactly that function, and then evaluate the VEV again. So like, it's like a function before you put it to be a number.
I think for calculation that's okay, but for measuring, I would like to have some relation between observables that I can like check in the experiment, and I don't see how I can measure the right hand side of the experiment. But go on, maybe it will become clear later.
Okay, let's just see if this is at all true then. Okay. As a first step, like is it just not true at all, or is it, maybe it could be true. So the first thing we can check is that if we go from the left-hand side being n plus 1 being equal to 4, and the right-hand side it's equal to 3. So the right-hand side is 0, right? So this amplitude in that case is 0. And then we'll take the soft limit of like particle 4, p4. And see that both of these Mandelstams depend on p4, so they both vanish. That's consistent, but it's not really, it's kind of trivial. So, but let's then see for 5 points, the 4 points, what happens. So again, we'll take the fifth leg soft.
Wait, so they vanish because of the condition, right?
Yeah, okay, so it's, in this case, it's like, it's this. So it's linear in p4. So when you set p4 to 0, it's just 0.
But the strong condition has been used already.
Yes, so I'm still doing this theory. These are evaluated on shell. These are on shell scattering amplitudes. So 5 points to 4 points. The first line here depends on S4-5, S3-5, S2-5. They all depend on the fifth momentum. So they all vanish. Now the second line, they don't vanish. Except this one vanishes as well. But so that's, it's still there. If you just look more closely, there's the same S3-4, same S2-4. And here it's like R I K J L. There's R I K J L. Same here. But there's an additional covariant derivative on the outside, which is what the soft theorem says. That the soft limit somehow like probes the scattering amplitude in the direction of the soft particle. And you can check this from 6 points to 5 points as well. It's more complicated, but still works. We also have a like derivation or a proof of that relation. So it's like an endpoint statement. Good. And what it's somehow telling you is that is this picture, that it's the soft limit of an amplitude like probes infinitesimally like away from your vacuum. So it's like it's probing what's happening here in that direction. And good. So let's add some more structure to it. So this is a general claim that in this theory, this is a soft theorem. If we add some like higher derivative interaction. Say if we want to add this thing.
Yeah, but coming to my question, I don't know if you're going to discuss it later. You know, how do I verify this type of relation? You know.
So you can check it in examples, which we did.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can you can derive it.
No, again.
Maybe we can, you want to measure it?
Probably. I guess. By induction. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Endpoint.
No, I believe. Yeah. No, I trust. I believe that one can prove that. No. But is there any like prediction, experimental prediction, or it's just fun relation which is kind of totally abstract?
So it's in some sense it's linking these coefficients to these coefficients, right? Okay. It's saying like
say for the sake of discussing, their model Hayes is a white particle, right? Then. Mm-hmm. I don't know, its production out of the W line is exactly, you know, derivative of that line over the Higgs web. So.
I see, so basically you can calculate the two things and compare?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, like it's maybe hard to measure like 5 Higgses or Higgses, but yeah, in principle, that's what you can do. And you can also.
Probably at some point. Holds even more generically, even for the, at a certain level for the masses. Assuming that the masses.
Good. Yeah. Let's see if we can be more generic. So one thing you can say that's okay. This was just like some two derivative theory. It was like nonlinear single model, and so on. But what about this interaction here? Now you have 4 derivatives, and some coefficient here, which in general depends on the scalars. Now, you can again check and calculate what this will give in the amplitudes. It will like, add an additional contributions here. So it would be something like S1, 2, S3, 4, those other stuff.
Do you impose any positivity bounds on this?
I'm not imposing anything. Not even I'm just saying here's a scalar as interactions. I'm not saying anything about interactions, whether they're positive, whether they're yeah. So it just any like guard variety scalar theory, which can be like in specific cases be specialized to have symmetry or have imposed positive bias and so on. But for now, I'm doing something else. But it would be interesting to add that on top. That's I won't go into the details there. So at 4 points, like this interaction will induce some term with now two of these Mandelstams, like S1, 2 and S3, 4, because there are four derivatives, times some coefficient here, which is a tensor. And at 5 points, you might guess that it should depend on something like this. This can you just calculate, I should say. And a bunch more terms. And again, you can just, like with this addition of this higher derivative interaction, verify whether this soft theorem holds. So 4 points to 3 points, all vanishes because it's an S4. Now 5 points to 4 points, in this term, you see there's the same S1, 2, S3, 4, the same tensor, but just additional covariant derivative on the outside. This works. All the dots work as well, but I won't write them out explicitly. So even in this extended theory with higher derivatives, the soft theorem still holds. And you can add anything else. It doesn't change the soft theorem. As like any higher derivative, like more derivatives, the same thing goes through.
Sorry, another question. These are all tree-level amplitude, right?
This is tree-level, yes.
And is it going to be all for amplitudes?
Yes. These are tree-level amplitudes. You can build loop amplitudes from tree amplitudes through like unitarity cuts and so on. So it's not maybe surprising that loop amplitude also will depend on geometric quantities similar to the three-level amplitudes. This soft theorem doesn't depend on it being tree. So in principle, like the derivation, it's the same derivation, we'll go into that. It's the same derivation as in the case for pions, for the Adler zero, which also holds a loop level. So it should be applicable there as well. But we haven't calculated the loop amplitude to verify. So OK, so let's see if we can rediscover some known facts from this. Because I'm saying this is a soft theorem for scalars. We know soft theorem for scalars already. Like, for example, the pion amplitudes. And for pions, the soft limit vanishes. Here it doesn't look like it vanishes. So let's see if we can rederive that result. Okay, so if you have a symmetry, so the pions spontaneously break the chiral symmetry. So there's a non-linear realized symmetry in play. So why are they special? They are pseudonormal goals to bosons. That symmetry, like in Lagrangian terms, it just means that if you shift your fields by something like this, that could depend on your scalars, if the action is invariant of the total derivative, then you have a symmetry. So this is a statement about symmetry in Lagrangian. In the geometric framework, symmetry is an isometry. So these symmetry generators will be identified with the killing vectors in the manifold. So, and that's, and we can use that fact to massage our soft theorem. So we have So the scaling amplitude depends on these like flavor indices, like this. Just gonna write them out to make it more precise, like this. That's the geometric soft theorem. Now, if we have a symmetry, and in particular if there is like a shift piece. Like the symmetry at the VEV is non-zero. It's like a finite shift part. We can use that to dot that into this equation. So we can contract with this killing vector, contract up this I index, like this. And then we can use a property about these killing vectors and the fact that there's a symmetry, namely that the lead derivative of the amplitude is zero. That's just a statement that the amplitude respects the symmetry. But that allows us to somehow swap the order here. So instead of having a covariant derivative acting on the amplitude, we have a covariant derivative acting on the killing vector, which is like a matrix multiplying the amplitude. Yeah. So there's like a IA. JA. Yeah. Yeah. Array. And this reformulation gets us closer to something that's familiar or more familiar, namely that the soft limit of the amplitude is like proportional to the amplitude. There's no like differential operator acting on the amplitude. It's just some constant times the amplitude, which now you can more easily measure. Because it's the same amplitude. And this is actually the form of a generic soft theorem for like Nambler-Golson bosons of some global internal symmetry as this form. So I was just saying any symmetry that respects this for scalars would be like resulting Lagrangian would be this form, and the symmetry would be this. Without saying what kind of coset it is, what kind of symmetry breaking pattern it is, this is like all of them at once. Now, for if you want this to be zero, which is the case for pions, that's a special condition on the symmetry, namely that this it's a symmetric coset. So the pions are like a special case for symmetry breaking, but you can recover it from this geometric soft theorem. OK, good. Now,
sorry,
yeah.
Can you go on? So in the case of pions,
yeah.
can you tell anything about the way it goes?
I want to see the coefficient of the zero. Good, yes. This is a leading order soft theorem in the sense that it's taking this equation to zero, and any like thing that's order q, you want c in this equation. So in certain cases, there are specialness that some theories manage like even more, even softer than you would expect. So like sometimes this order q term is zero, and it's like q squared, that's the first non-vanishing thing, which would be like a subleading soft theorem. This is not a statement about those, but it's something I've been wanting to look at because if there is a universal, if this term is universal, if you have a special theory that is universal, how can that be phrased in a geometric language? What's the coefficient? How can you like phrase it geometrically? Yeah, but that's unknown as of yet.
I mean, especially in the case of pions.
Yes.
Controlled by a theory that can also
I join a scalar.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I was wondering if that's subletting soft theorem for pions secretly could be reinterpreted as, say, like the curvature shows up, times some pole, and then you sum over, like you can rewrite a biadjoint pion amplitudes as a purely pion amplitude, but the coefficient is a curvature. Which is like, yeah, it's definitely a project that's doing that. Good. Let's then do something more. Let's do ask a different question, or let's ask two questions. Namely, as far up to this point, I've just said, okay, let's do this field definition where like phi goes to a function of phi. But in general, you can also allow for derivatives in the field definition, and so on. And how is that encoded? So that's an invariance of the scaling amplitudes. It's an invariance of the physical results. But it's not been accounted for yet. So how can we account for this interaction or this redundancy in a geometric way? That's question one. Question two is, it looks like there's like a disjoint between these two different interactions. Like this was like a GIJ, it's a metric. So the metric was like the star of the whole discussion. All this lambda was some like other thing that wasn't really important, right? So like, why is this important and this one is not so important in the geometric phrasing? Or put differently, how can you treat these higher derivative interactions in a geometric way? It turns out that both those questions can be answered by a joint answer. And you can intuitively see why, because if you do this field definition, terms from here will feed downstream into this. So you will induce this interaction by doing this field definition. So they're linked. So one way of doing it is to say, let's reinterpret our Lagrangian. And instead of writing it like this, let's write it like, still have a two derivative theory of these guys out here. And let's write it with a different metric, like g prime, that can depend on both phi and d mu phi, which I think was a question from earlier. So I haven't done anything. I've just like grouped terms. So in particular, this g prime is just g plus this lambda. Something like this, right? So I'm just regrouping the terms. But I'm also interpreting it differently. I'm saying, let's treat it as a G prime, as a new metric that could depend on momentum, could depend on derivatives. And then we just like run with the same set of formulas that we had from before. But from this new metric, we have the new Christoffel symbol and new curvature. And what happens in the scattering amplitudes is that instead of having this term and this term, they're not there anymore. Or they're there, but they're repackaged. And they get repackaged precisely into all the curvatures, like this. So this is the scattering amplitudes for any higher derivative interactions, deformations of the pions, or for this two derivative scalar theory, just with different curvatures that now depend on the kinematics.
I'm not sure I understand what it means. So now your metric depends not only on coordinates, but also on gradients in space.
Yeah. It's like you have to like.
How do you even define these curvatures or what they are? What are covering the derivatives with respect to what? But, yeah. Should I think about these gradients as additional coordinates on my manifold or what?
Yeah, like in a sense, it's like the information you're putting into your manifold is not just phi anymore, but it's phi and its momentum. And so it's going from even in the simplest case, if you have only a single scalar, mm-hmm. just one phi, mm-hmm. like this index is like just one index. This will be flat, because it's a one-dimensional line. But when you upgrade it to this form, it will still be just one scalar, but it depends on its momentum. So it becomes like infinite dimensional rather than one-dimensional. So this depends on p's, like on momenta. Well, so each like how you configure the momenta is like in sense a different point.
Your space group is essentially how you calculate the Riemanns.
So you calculate in the same way as before. It's easiest in momentum space. Then like these d mu phi's become like p mu phi. That's why when you take these go from the metric to the Riemann, you end up with derivative or with p's of the various scalars involved. So I think just to be.
Is it that you just kind of treat these gradients as parameters? So basically, is it what you are saying? So you.
It depends like this.
But what happens if you have more? Yeah, what if you have higher derivatives?
Yeah, same thing. Like, I'm saying, okay, and then I'm saying. This is how you do it here. If you do plus dot dot dot, you do the same thing. Any higher derivative interactions can be grouped up in this way. Similarly, like this one transforms as a tensor under a generic field definition with derivatives. So it solves like both those questions. And then at the practical level, it's like your task of calculating the scattering amplitudes is reduced from doing that calculations to calculating your R prime. Because the scattering amplitudes are the same as for pions. And we can even, yeah, so you might not like it or you might like it, I don't know. But we can even just go a bit more off the rails and ask about what about this thing? That's like the thing that's not been added as of yet, just a potential, has no derivatives. Still, you can add it here. And the way to add it is that you can add it with a non-local piece to compensate these two derivatives. So in a sense, it would be like in momentum space, it would be g prime, and it would be like a non-local part in your metric. And then you can rerun the calculation, calculate from your G prime to Christoffel to Riemann. And this is still the scattering amplitudes for phi cube theory. And all the non-local, all the poles in phi cube theory emerge from this non-local part of the curvatures. It's like, in a sense, a different decomposition of the scattering amplitude that builds on the covariant objects, the covariant curvatures for the pions.
So it's just to make sure I understand. So you mean in this phi cube case, all the physical pole in the factorization channel appears there?
Right? Yes, right. So you have, like, that's a local amplitude, right? There's no poles. And in phi cube, you would have these, and this is an actual pole. You have like lambda lambda 1 over s 1 2. And that's coming from a double pole in these curvatures that first cancel this Kinai factor and then surviving thing is the correct pole. That works here, it works here. It's quite non-trivial when you just plug it in because you have these, like, all these like complicated structure emerges from these objects.
When you take these current derivatives, you act only on phi, not on momentum, right?
Yeah, so like in good. So like in practice, what happens if you want to calculate dd phi, and if your object depends on momentum of phi, the momentum remains while the phi goes away. That makes sense. So if you have something that's like schematic, like pi, phi I, right, stuff, it removes this and you have a pi left over. That's why these depend on pi's. But these covariant derivatives are related to phi, not d mu phi.
Oh, I see, I see. So you change all derivatives for momentum. The phi remains. So if I have d mu phi, that will become p mu phi, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's like the trick that goes into it. And, okay. And since we're like on this rail, what about other things that we could have added? What about other particles which are not scalars? What about gauge bosons? So even for gauge bosons, let me see how I want to say this.
Wait, maybe can I?
Yeah.
Yeah, would it be? Yeah, so would it be right to say that you first go from this Lagrangian to space-time representation, you go to the momentum representation, where it becomes non-local, but you don't worry about that, right? That it's non-local, you just...
Yeah, close your eyes, move ahead.
And in that case, you get some kind of metric.
Yeah. Yeah, and the statement is that these okay, good. Okay, let me back up one step. So the statement is that all these scaling amplitudes remain the same with this like form replacement and these non-local poles. The soft theorem, when you have this potential, the reason why I was leaving it out from before is that it usually is like a bad thing for soft theorems, because when you have this like cubic interaction for scalars, and you take one of the particles soft, this is a divergence, it's a soft pole from that propagator. Like if you have a amplitude, and you have like a soft emission here, this propagator becomes like 1 over pi to pj. So it diverges in the soft limit. But written this way, the soft theorem is still applies, just with the covariant derivative being the appropriate covariant derivative now with these non-local pieces. So all these non-local pieces reemerges as they have to when you use the correct connection. And then we can go to asking about, unless there's some objections, we can ask about, this is all scalars for now. What about other theories with more particles? What about gauge bosons? And there you can play similar games. You can say, you can write a theory of scalars and gauge bosons. You can even make a charge. So on, add the scalar interactions, and still massage it into this form. That now your field depends on both the scalars and the gauge bosons, like in a bigger multiplet. And in those theories, if you take the soft scalar theorems, they still work. If you take a soft particle soft with scalars, it's still the same soft theorem. And you can even like replace this index from being a scalar index to a photon, say, and then you get back Weinberg-Sauth theorem in this form. If this one is a photon, Weinberg-Sauth theorem can be derived from the geometric Sauth theorem at leading and subleading order.
I don't understand special about this quadratic part because somehow it was clear. Okay, you have metric.
Okay, right.
You start from it. You work through. But now you said, okay, you can package anything you have into metric. But why into metric? Why metric plays a special role? Why do you want to get this two index standard?
Yeah. So the name of the game here is to make the theory like manifestly invariant on the field of definitions, which it's like saying you would like to do differential geometry in a covariant way, right? And there, like, metric is part of defining your manifold, defining your geometry, and you would then calculate things which are covariant from it. So it's all streams from the metric. Like, start with the metric, do these derivations, and then you get these results.
Well, in other words, I think if I allow myself to kind of put this momenta, I could repackage everything into potential.
Good. Yes, but then, you could do that, but then your invariant quantity would be the amplitude itself. Your amplitude would be covariant derivatives of the potential. That's it. There's one term. So like you would say, then the statement would be like, the amplitude is invariant because the amplitude is invariant. Here it's like more deconstructed into different pieces. Here are two terms.
Okay, good. Why don't you then package things into four index structure, and maybe that will give you some additional leverage? I don't know. Yeah, you package everything into two index structure. So you say packaging into zero index structure is not efficient, you don't get anything. Packaging into two index structure, you get something.
Yeah.
A lot, actually. So why not package into four index structure, and it will give you some complicated geometry, perhaps, and more.
My problem with that is I don't know what to do here. Like, what's the recipe to follow if you just start with this? Maybe there's something, but it's in some way a practical oriented philosophy. Like, we would like to calculate something, and maybe it's more efficient. Mm-hmm. So, and here it's clear what you do. Like, you just take this, you can just like chunk it through this pipeline, and you get the answer. But like, we haven't just explored other things to do. Good. So there are other things I could talk about, but I think I'm running a bit low on time.
You definitely have like 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. Well, let me just say something that's on the same topic, but it's different. Yeah. So, okay, this was all like, this was all tree level, but of course, like you can ask, what happens at one loop? Does like this whole thing break down at one loop or not? And you can take your reformulation of the amplitudes and calculate, say, the one loop RG in terms of geometric quantities. And we did that exercise. And like that, the running of the, and you can reformulate the run. So usually, like say, if you do the standard model VFT, you express the running of your Wilson coefficient in terms of the Wilson coefficients. So like, as some Wilson coefficient, it depends on other Wilson coefficients on the right hand side. But you can equally rephrase that result in terms of like this covariant object, like the curvature itself. You can calculate the running of the Riemann curvature in terms of other geometric objects. So it will depend on like the Riemann curvature again, plus the Riemann curvature and covariant derivatives of the potential. And if you have gauge bosons, it depends on also the curvature times. So if you have gauge boson, you have it here. You couple the scalar with the covariant derivative with the gauge boson. This is actually a Killing vector. And it depends here on covariant derivatives of that Killing vector and so on. So all your all the statements about the RG can also be phrased in just in terms of covariant objects. So we did this for this animal EFT and up to mass dimension 8. Or this is any mass dimension. You can expand this to higher and higher orders, but you can then take it for specifically 4 powers of the cutoff scale. You have some operator and you have this order in the SMEFT. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop there, and then we can continue chatting about it.
Can you generalize this to non-abelian case theory?
Good. So you can do this for non-abelian gauge theories as well. You can do it for gravity, if you wish. It'd be like a geometry of gravity, but in a different sense.
It's going to be a color index.
Yes, good. So just to be more explicit about it, your flavor index here, you might want to call it phi I. And I could be your scalar flavor. It could be for the gauge field. It has both a space-time index and a gauge field index. It would be this combined index. For gravity, it would be 2 indices. And you can do all those in a souped up notation like that.
So if I imagine this for the non-abelian cases, the 4 point is going to be these 2 terms, and questions would be, are these 2 Riemann tensors going to be gauge invariant objects, or you need to sum them to be a gauge invariant?
Good, yeah. So good question. This amplitude is gauge invariant. It's not obvious. When you do this, there are some choices involved. You could do it in different ways, and you get for any choice, all this follows. But you might end up with different curvatures depending on your choice. And not all curvatures are gauge invariant. So there might be or naively gauge invariant. It might be gauge covariant. Rather than invariant, so but it's it's a more detailed thing to study. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happens when you do soft limits at all?
Oh yeah, great question. So I did not say that, but we also looked at double soft, taking 2 particle soft at the same time. So that double soft limit. Looks something like this. You have 2 particles, you take both of them, both of them are meant to be 0. And this is actually slight generalization of a known result. So for pions, the single soft theorem vanishes. But the double soft theorem does not vanish. It becomes a non-zero thing. And it becomes you go from n plus 2 to n point. And the prefactor here is S 1j minus S 2j. R ij or I1 I2 jk. Yeah, sorry. Well, let me just move it a bit so you can see what's going on. So it now, instead of depending on the covariant derivative, it depends on the curvature in field space j prime. Like this. Sum over j, so it's for each external leg like this, and that's like the known or the result for the pion case has this form, has a like anti-symmetric numerator over a pole, and they both go to zero, but at the same rate, so it doesn't vanish. And then there's Riemann curvature here. But in addition, there's also a term that looks like this. Like the symmetrized covariant derivative acting on amplitude. And that one is zero for pions, but non-zero in general. So you can see that like this Saw theorem now depends on just more geometric objects. And if you do three particles being soft, it's similar. You have some part which is like S over S covariant derivative of R plus S over S R covariant derivative of amplitude plus like three covariant derivatives like that. So it all becomes like more and more like of these like geometric objects that feed sound. And if you do like endpoint or like and if you like keep on going, you just like probe me the whole amplitude in a sense.
So when you direct these relations, you use only the geometry. So I wonder, you don't need Lagrangian for that, right? Or you
do. So we go, yeah, good. So the way to, like, if you're asking about which part, these parts? Soft theorem?
Well, think more about soft relation, yeah.
The soft theorem, it's like, usually you derive the soft theorem, say for the other zero, from like a current conservation relation. Sure. And from that, you can derive that the soft limit vanishes.
Yeah, in your case, yeah.
Here, it's, we didn't, there's no symmetry a priori. So there's no like conserved current, but we still can derive like an analogous form that only relies on having like the matrix element of an equation of motion operator vanishing, which is a generic statement in any field theory. And from that, we get this geometric soft theorem.
And the equation of motion, in which form do you
use? We
motion operator, you say.
Yeah, we just, you can derive it from like the on-shell matrix element of, if you wish, like something here, and you have equation of motion. Particle I.
Yeah, I think what I'm asking is to what extent you rely on Lagrangian. In other words, can you reconstruct this amplitude, this relation, this amplitude just on some ground invariance and dimensional perhaps arguments and all? I mean, at least reconstruct the terms. I mean, maybe not coefficients in front of them, or maybe even coefficients. I don't know. Because you see, I mean, like you're writing some covariant expressions. So.
Yeah. So we calculate this just from, take your Lagrangian, you can do Feynman rules, and just like, all right, but just calculate what you get. Uh-huh. And then you realize that the coefficient here is the curvature. So you calculate this thing, you calculate it in two ways. You calculate it from the curvature, like GR expression, that's your way of calculating the curvature. And then you calculate amplitude with Feynman rules. And you realize that these are the same objects.
Okay.
That's how you identify it.
Okay, that's what you did.
Yeah.
But now, you know, like knowing that, not,
yeah.
Definition without derivation without Lagrangian.
Good. Yeah, it's a great question. Things I just didn't say what I should have said. So how can you use this? And you can use it for like, constructing higher point amplitudes from lower point amplitudes. And the input you need is just a soft theorem. So what you can do is you can do like on-shell recursive relations to go from lower point to the higher points. So for pions, if you just do that, there's usually this problem with the boundary term when you like deform your momenta and so on. And the way to get around it for pions is that you input the information that the self-limit vanishes. So instead of having so that basically you do like you deform your amplitude. It's probably well known at this place, right? And instead of like calculating the contour around the origin, you calculate you blow up the contour, and you pick up factorization channels, right? This is like it becomes like some sum over like lower amplitudes. Like at these, the other singularities are factorization channels, which are low point amplitudes. But there's also a boundary term that, in general, you have to include. In special theories, the boundary term vanishes, so it's zero. For pions, it's non-vanishing. So for Young-Mills and gravity, you can make it vanish. Pions, it doesn't vanish. But the way to get around it is to say, okay, it vanishes when z, your complex deformed parameter, goes to infinity. Let's divide by something with more z's in the denominator. And then you just get a slightly more complicated expression here. And you have to worry about the poles from this function you introduced. But if you can match that function to be like vanish, if you can like tune this to be where the amplitude vanishes, there are no other poles, right? And that's where the input from the soft theorem for pions. So you can like with this appropriate thing, this one goes to zero, and these extra poles are not there. Now in this case, when it's not pions, when it doesn't vanish, you can still do the same thing. And instead of having something that's, you get this, the boundary term vanishes, and you get the residues here, right, as well. But that's the point where you introduce this covariant derivative. So instead of having it vanishing, you just evaluate what it is at that pole and pick up the residue, and you get some recursive relation that involves the soft theorem. And from that, you can go from 4 points plus soft theorem to 5 points, and so on. That's a way of like avoiding having the Lagrangian in play. The relation to loop amplitudes.
Yeah.
Yes. So good. So let's just say something. So let's forget the prime for now. And ask about what about loops for like the usual geometry. And like okay, so the RG part, for example, one way to understand how the RG comes about is that when you calculate the RG at one loop, say, that involves having some like two particle cut like this. This will pick up like the UV divergence or the UV divergence. So like the one loop amplitude depends on like a product of two tree level amplitudes. This would be like a tree. This is a tree. This is like a loop, or the UV divergence part, if you want to calculate the RG at one loop. It's just a product of three amplitudes. And the three amplitudes are in terms of these geometric quantities. So then you can see that the RG just, in a sense, of course, depends on the curvature again. Yeah. You can do it in this on-shell way. You can also do it in the more off-shell, like, or effective action calculation, still using the geometry to make your life easier. And there as well, like, it depends all on, say, like, the R squareds and R covariant derivatives of potential and so on, like, in the effective action. Yeah, maybe I can end on saying there's one, like, missing part of the story that's fermions. I said nothing about fermions, but all this, like statements about that it should be invariant under Fourier definitions apply to fermions as well. This should be extendable to include fermions, but that's not, it's not there yet.
Are you working on that? Spacing something?
Yeah, so you can ask about the supersymmetry for space. You can also ask without. Yes, there are literature on, like, supersymmetric nonlinear silver model, for example, where all this would be very natural to include. So that's, like, the first place to look and see what's been done and what's extendable. But it should be detached in a sense, like. Supersymmetry is unnecessary. So it should be possible to do it without it. And then it could be mirrored up if you wish to do that. So yeah, there's some ideas that I'm working on there.